came to America when he was 6 months old. He started as a stock boy at the grocery store. Eventually, he owned it. He turned it into the biggest grocery store chain in New York City. He now owns a real estate company worth over $2 billion. He ran for mayor of New York City. He almost won. You can't make this story up. This is the Katz Roundtable with John Catsimatidis.
Everywhere around the world, they come to America.
Good morning, New York. This is the Katz Roundtable. John Catsimatidis here Sunday morning. We have Governor David Paterson to tell us what's the update on the budget. Zach Williams from Albany. What is going on in Albany? Ed Cox, the GOP point of view of what's going on in Albany. Dave Donovan from the New York State Broadcasters Association. What is the fate of AM radio? Senator Alphonse D'Amato, Jody Giglio, straight from the Assembly in Albany. Eric Schuffler, what's going on in New Jersey? And let's start off with Michael Soler, our usual Sunday morning real estate report.
Good morning. This is Mike Stoller for the Stoller Real Estate Report on the Katz Roundtable. What is life science? You hear about it, but you don't know what it is. What is it confined to? What type of buildings do you do? What kind of tenants do you have? I really don't have any idea of life sciences, so I brought the expert, the vice chairman at CBRE, Bill Hartman. Mr. Life Science, tell me the definition of life science.
Well, it goes in many different directions.
Good. That's why we're here today.
But at its cure, at its core is the cure of disease, and that can take many forms. I mean, if you look at what's happened over the last 20 years, you have companies like Gilead producing a cure for not a treatment, but a cure for hep C. 5 million people with a chronic disease now living healthy lives. So it's all about the patient and delivering cures. And recently you're seeing companies like BMS and Merck with their new oncology drugs that are changing the landscape for people. When you get a diagnosis for cancer, your life changes. And so the result of that research that's done in labs around the world, at institutions, at biotechs, at pharma companies, is changing how we deliver cures to patients globally.
So what type of buildings do we use for life science?
So they're pretty broad.
Especially in the metropolitan area.
So we'll keep it to the metropolitan when it goes globally. I mean, you need very robust facilities that include HVAC that is multiple of what you would have in an office. You have it running 24/7. You have power that's double what you would see in an office building. But there are similarities that you have big high ceilings and amenities that have become very important, both to the office users and as well to the lab. And you'll see examples of that, whether it's at the Cure on 345 Park or 125 West End Avenue or the Alexander Center. They're all very concerned with the work environment. And the beautiful thing about the labs is you kind of have to be in the lab to do your work, unlike in the office sector. You can work from home or, frankly, from anywhere in a lot of cases.
I mean, the first major entity to come in was Alexandria, on 30th Street and 1st Avenue, York Avenue over there. Now, they were supposed to build another building. What happened on them?
So I think the timing just hasn't been right. Right, I'm pretty sure they were ready to go before the pandemic. The pandemic hit, and the game just changed. And I know they have plans to kick it off again. I don't know that they've announced it yet, but they're balancing that smartly with the demand. And I suspect they'll probably come out in the next year or so.
What about the repurposing of office buildings and other structures for lab space?
So that's very challenging as converting office to residential, which is a big issue these days. We probably looked at every building available for sale in New York over the last decade, and very small portion of them will actually work as a conversion, and mostly because you need high ceilings, heavy floor loads, a lot of power, and most of the buildings did not sort of meet those criteria.
Now, you were quoted recently, in addition, speaking to me on the phone, is that we've had the worst 2 years in the life science business. What do you mean by that, and what does the future look like?
So from the business perspective, very little capital raise. So that's painful because we all follow the money, and then the money eventually will turn into real estate demand. The demand on the real estate side has diminished. So if you look at the major markets, Boston, San Francisco, San Diego, those markets, the demand there has probably been cut by 70%. And it's at a time when there is huge, huge inventory coming online. In Boston, there's 15 million square feet of space coming online. In San Francisco, 8. So with the backdrop of that diminished demand and increased supply, it's a pretty challenging time all around. And the same dynamic has happened here in New York. The demand is lower, and the building supply actually could be considered a good thing because New York has always had a hard time delivering lab space to the users here.
Who's financing and providing equity for the lab space business?
So it's unlike when Alexandria first started building here. The capital was not as robust as it is now. I mean, Alexandria is a huge, huge company now. Biomed Realty was bought by Blackstone. They're very well capitalized. The other players have different capital sources throughout, and the smaller, less well-capitalized companies have raised capital. And listen, in the last, prior to the pandemic and during the pandemic, the demand for life science product was through the roof. The cap rates are lower than office, and it was a very, very hot product. Obviously, that's changed at this point. But so the capital was robust. Right now, it's a little bit trickier, not unlike the office.
Now, where is the capital coming from? Is it domestic? Is it private equity? Is it the stock market?
Interestingly, it's both private equity, public markets, and philanthropy. So it's a bit of a mix.
So I think life science is alive. It's going to continue, and I'd like to thank Bill Hartman for being here today.
Thanks, Mike.
You are listening to the Cats Roundtable. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Lou Dobbs for Priority Gold, America's precious metals dealer. These are volatile times with high inflation, soaring debt, wars on multiple continents, and rising financial stress. Central banks are buying gold to diversify their reserves, so are many Americans. Call Priority Gold and find out how precious metals can help you diversify your portfolio. They're highly rated and happy to help. Call 1-866-303-6357 or get a free gold guide at PriorityGoldGuide.com. That's PriorityGoldGuide.com.
Welcome back to the Cats Roundtable. With us this morning is Governor David Paterson, a good friend. Common sense. You know, we ought to patent that word because we started using it 3 years ago, and everybody's using that word now. David Paterson, is the word common sense patentable?
I think so. I was watching one of those national shows, and the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, was talking about the people who were, you know, way out on the fringe. And he said, come on, we have to have more common sense leadership here. Now, as far as I know, you and he haven't met yet, right?
No, we had lunch one time at the Empire Steakhouse. I yelled and screamed at our own New York State congregation and said, we all need more common sense.
Well, he's taking your pass for a touchdown. I'll put it that way. Meanwhile, up in Albany, I think we are seeing the emergence of a real leader now. You know, you can have the title governor, but the point is whether or not you can lead. So Kathy Hochul, who introduced a budget of $233 billion earlier in the year, has now passed a budget at $237 billion, meaning that the legislature was only able to push the spending up about 1.5%. And if you remember, we had a number of people on Cat's Roundtable at 5 o'clock who were saying that that budget would be $275 billion. Well, that didn't happen. So that's the first victory for her. The second victory is one where instead of just folding up her tents and going away, she comes back with a different housing plan. And after 2 years, she's passed a housing plan, one that was virulently objected to by the Long Island legislators and many other legislators. And she went back, and what she's now done is she still has the plan, But the local governments have the choice to opt in or not, depending on their circumstances.
You're not going to put affordable housing on Fifth Avenue?
No, I don't think that's going to happen. Everybody on Fifth Avenue is safe for the time being. And what she was able to do this, and I think that in this case she got some objection still, even though it's in the budget, from some of the Democrats that would like to mix affordable housing into the regular housing stock. And she also got some objection from our own Ed Cox, the chair of the Republican Party, who's on Cat's Roundtable as well. He thinks that it is going to limit the number of choices people can make. So if you have pretty responsible criticism from both sides of the aisle, I say, ding, ding, you're a winner. And I'd say that, you know, as we go through, you know, just some of the other areas, Mayor Adams is very happy. At the last minute, they stuck in his mayoral control. They put some restrictions on it. And he got up and cheered for it. And he also is now very happy about the fact that though he asked for $6 billion to try to deal with 184,000 migrants running around the city, he actually got about $2.5 billion for that. And he lauded the governor for giving him that. So I think that even in terms of her interaction with her colleagues, the mayor probably realizes now that his remarks about the federal government were probably a little antagonistic, where Hochul kind of laid out what the problem was but didn't assess blame. And now you see Adams, who probably really in his heart wants all the $6 billion to deal with these migrants, but I think even he is learning from Hochul that you don't have to necessarily become antagonistic when there isn't a real cause to. Sometimes you just speak offline or on the phone one-to-one. And that's how you get things done.
I'm proud that the fact that she is using common sense and in that she stood up to some of the people that were surrendering. I mean, I could not believe, you know, Hastie used to have common sense, and he was being held hostage by some of the, I'm not going to call them Democrats, I'm going to call them socialists. Or something, whatever they want to call them.
Some of them really accept that. And one very good example of what you pointed out, John, is that Hochul did. The one situation that she reversed her course from the year before, and she got, I think it's 13 new pieces of legislation that assess criminality to assaulting workers in stores who either are in the stores or trying to defend themselves or trying to defend the store when there's a robbery, which for some reason these members of the assembly are opposing that, and nobody really understands it. But there was still controversy about that as late as last Sunday, and she told them it's got to be that way, and they went kicking and screaming, but they did what she needed them to do, and she did the right thing.
What else would you like to talk about this Sunday morning?
Well, on Thursday morning, there was an arrest of two students at Columbia University for vandalism. And really what it is that Columbia University has a shocking number of students and faculty who are openly supporting Hamas. And I didn't say support for Palestine. That's one thing. They are actually supporting Hamas. And even the professors there are speaking out. One professor, Joseph Amal, I believe is his name, said that any actions that the Israelis take remind him of the suppression of the Jews after the Warsaw Ghetto riots back in the 40s. He's got to be out of his mind. And comparing Columbia University and Israel, and I guess the United States' support of it, to a kind of Nazism, which is crazy. And what's difficult is that the president of the school, who really got grilled when she went to testify in Washington, has got to kind of recognize, yes, there are freedom of speech issues. This is America. And as much as we don't tolerate a lot of what we hear, we have to let people speak. But these people are now going beyond that and trying to dictate to the school where it spends money. So they actually have an alternate school in Israel where you can get the degree from Columbia or this school, and they want that canceled. But that's freedom of speech, education. So they're actually rebelling against themselves. And I think more and more the rabid anti-Semitism that's coming across, not only from extremist groups in this country, but people who we thought would understand the outcry of a people who were attacked on October 7th, seems to be going very much in the wrong direction, and I find it disturbing.
Last question. In honesty, are people in your gut, in your heart, are people in New York City, New York State, going to be safer following this new budget?
I think with the new laws being put on the books, I would say yes. Now, it may take a long time coming. The housing that Governor Hochul wants to institute, 200,000 units, 20,000 a year, that's going to take a long time coming. But I think the forecast is good.
Well, thank you, Governor Patterson, for coming on this Sunday morning.
Thank you, John. Take care.
The Cats Roundtable.
With us today is Ed Cox, the New York State GOP chairman. What's going on in New York State? We got a new budget. Are New Yorkers going to be able to fare and go through it? Mr. Cox, tell us what's going on.
John, the New York State budget once again is an abomination. $237 billion, which is more than twice the size of Florida's budget. And Florida has 2 million more people than New York, and they're doing just fine in all the services that they provide to the people of Florida. This is a ongoing problem for New York, and the supermajorities in the legislature, they just keep passing out money to their constituencies, to their friends, and that is the abomination of the budget process here in New York. We need to have a real two-party system in New York. Republicans had part of the power in Albany. We could check these things, and now we can't do it. And they can also run over the governor because it is a veto-proof legislature with a supermajority in the assembly and a supermajority in the Senate. The governor doesn't have the power of the veto. They can take it away from her. And our Constitution is made with the specific idea of giving the governor, who represents all the people, the executive power to control the legislature. Any legislature wants to spend, but this progressive legislature, boy, do they know how to spend. And that is why New York has the highest taxes of any state in the United States.
Well, we are the highest taxes in the United States, and we are double. If you live in New York State, it's double. And if you live in New York City, New York State, it's triple.
So, oh, my gosh. Absolutely. You add into New York City.
Another $100 billion.
And no wonder people are leaving New York City to go elsewhere. And this is the greatest city in the world, and some of our most capable people who are our highest paid workers, et cetera, they save money by moving elsewhere.
Well, I worry about people that live paycheck to paycheck. But guys like me and you, if we were safe in our streets, and you were a ranger, so you're tougher than me. If our kids were safe in our streets, I'd feel better. And I just hope, I haven't seen the final bill, what they're going to do to make us safer, but I think that's the number one priority.
It is clear that Speaker Hastie, who runs the assembly, doesn't care. He doesn't feel the punishment makes any difference. He just, for I don't know what his view of corrections is, but for him to say that punishment doesn't matter means that he is just out to lunch with respect to what matters in law enforcement.
California is trying to pass through their assembly more time for retail theft. So maybe they'll read what's going on in California, and maybe California is getting some common sense. Maybe they'll get some common sense.
With their governor and their legislature, which is completely dominated by one party, there may be an attempt to do that, but I'll believe it when I see it in California. And if it works, then we should do it here in New York. But we should do it here in New York. New York should be in the lead.
I just want our people to be safe.
Retail threat here.
Look, I'll pay the taxes, but at least let us be safe.
Our police force is down. It's not even up to its full force that is authorized. The disrespect for our police in our city council here, in the state legislature, is just discouraging people from wanting to join the police force. That's not good. You want good people in your police force, and you're not going to recruit them if the government is not does not have the backs of the blue.
Well, let's see when they do the final budget. I guess they're working the final details at this point.
Well, they had a problem. Someone hacked into their system. So their modern system, they had to use an old 1994 system to crank out the pages of the budget. So there may be a delay because of that. It is a huge, voluminous budget. There's a lot buried in it that the legislators, when they vote on it, won't know what's in there. So
it goes back to the old expression. What did Nancy Pelosi say? Let's pass the budget so we can find out what's in it.
Exactly. That's what's happened when they were dominating. Fortunately, we have, it may be a slim majority, but we have a majority in the House of Representatives, and they are insisting, look, let's make sure what we're doing when we pass a piece of legislation. But that when they had control of both houses, Speaker Pelosi in fact said that. That's right.
Ed Cox, thank you for bringing everybody up to date in New York City, New York State. And let's pray for New York and pray for our country. God bless you and God bless America. Thank you so much.
Amen, John. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Cats Roundtable. We'll be right back right after this break. Welcome back to the Cats Roundtable. With us this morning is Senator Alphonse D'Amato. Senator, our country seems to have a mess. We got possible wars on our horizon. We got Israel. We got Ukraine. We got the economy, the interest rates. I looked at the computer on Friday, and the interest rates for a 30-year mortgage was 7.5. I mean,
can you believe that?
What's going on?
How can a working family buy a house today? And so what does that do to the construction business? What does that do for young families who want to own a part of America, who want to be a part of America? We are in decline. And why? We run up deficits. We made it hard. We drove the price of fuel up. We didn't have to. Fuel should be way down. But no, this guy, he stops the pipeline coming in from Canada. He makes Iran rich because they export oil all over the place. Incredible. Incredible what this guy Biden has done.
And
where do you think all the problems in the Middle East come from? Who finances it? Iran. Who provides the weapon systems? Iran. How do they do it? The money they get from the sale of oil. Because this incompetent president, Joe Biden, lifted the sanctions. Now, why would you do that? Were they cooperating? Were they being less warlike? No, just the opposite. I'm going to tell you, our country faces a disaster. And what do we have? We got incompetent Joe. He is totally incompetent. And let me tell you, if he gets reelected, this country is in tremendous trouble. I support Trump, not because he's the greatest, because he's got a problem with his ego. All right? He's got to keep it under control. What he should be talking about is things that people can agree. He should say, this border should be closed. We cannot have millions of people from all over the world coming in. We can't have criminals coming in. We can't be clogging our cities, our streets, our communities, and costing the American taxpayers billions and billions of dollars and destroying communities. I will stop that. let me tell you, if he stays on that message, he wins. And stop just making crazy, stupid attacks.
When President Biden tried to get the price of oil down, they used the Houthis, who are on Iran's payroll, to lock down the Red Sea and lock down the Suez Canal. That raised the price of oil back to $85 a barrel. By raising it to $85 a barrel, the gasoline goes up, food prices go up, and inflation goes up, so interest rates go up. Our country is in a spin.
We are in a terrible situation. And I want to tell you, I don't say this as a Republican, and I know Joe Biden very, very well. He's deteriorated. He came to my wedding, all right? He came, you know, we had a friendship. My son and his son married first cousins. So, I mean, I know him well. Joe is not the old Joe. He has deteriorated. He's being run by a group of left-wingers, and he's become part of the conspiracy. Why would you want to cut down our production of energy? We should be the energy czars of the world. Why would you want to lift the sanctions against a crazy leader, the Iranian leader? He is horrible. He's anti-American. He's anti-democracy. He is, the guy's been in war. He's anti-Israel. I mean, and here he is basically protecting Iran. He wanted to make sure that Israel didn't respond too seriously. You know what Israel could have and should have done? Had Trump been in, he would have had them knock out Iran's nuclear capability. What the hell do we want? Do we really want them to go nuclear? What are we, nuts? Wake up, America. Now, that's what Trump should be talking about, okay?
I agree with you.
Our security, and not being afraid to take on Iran.
The FBI has warning us we got too many terrorists have entered the country.
They're coming into this country. You got thousands of Chinese. We don't even know how many of them are coming over with the help of the communist government. You think you get out of China just like you just walk out? Come on, wake up. And that's what's taking place. Tens of thousands of Chinese coming in here. I mean, and we got, and let me tell you this, you've got hardworking minorities whose families have been in this country. They're just beginning to make it. They're laborers. They're at the bottom of the thing, working themselves up. They're losing their jobs. Why? The immigrants who come in and undercut them, who get paid off the payroll. So the people employ them. And what happens? Hardworking at the lower level, American laborers, et cetera, lose their jobs. This is crazy. American citizens. We're being punished. Got to stop.
Senator D'Amato, have a great weekend. We're out of time, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Good being with you, John. Bye now.
With us today is Assemblywoman Jody Giglio, and she has a short update on what's going on in Albany with the budget. Jody Giglio, Assemblywoman of New York, is going to be safer after this budget is passed.
Absolutely not. And where policies were put in the budget to create bail reform, we are talking about closing jails with 90 days notice. We are talking about assault and harassment on transit workers, which is important. But there is nothing in here to protect law enforcement. And we know law enforcement protects us. So no, the budget is a item that refers to retail crime and retail theft. And it basically holds people, if you can catch them, that are responsible for these large scale organized retail theft, it moves them up to a felony D or a misdemeanor A. So it's stiffer penalties if you can catch them, and that's if you are caught.
Are they going to go to jail? Are they not going to? Are they going to get a parking ticket?
Well, that's yet to be seen, because we know how the district attorney in New York City and many district attorneys throughout the state are not enforcing these laws, and they're getting a slap on the wrist.
Understood. Anything else you want to tell the workers?
You know, the budget says that it's fostering the sale of stolen goods, a Class A misdemeanor. So if you foster the sale of stolen goods in person or online and knew or should have known that such goods were stolen, you could be charged with this new crime. So it's, you know, between that, the prison closures, not fixing bail reform, not doing anything to protect our children and our minors from being exploited on the internet, and not taking care of our people who take care of our most vulnerable, our veterans, our seniors, our people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and all the people that have been dedicated and been paying taxes in this state their whole lives.
All right. When is the budget? When are we going to know exactly what's in the budget?
What they're talking about now is we will be here until Sunday debating these budget bills. So we are through.
Okay.
Project now. Mental health will be next. And then we'll be here all day debating these budget bills. But you can be sure that we will be making sure.
Oh, thank
they
you.
And, are being and, taken care of and that they're safe.
Thank you so much for coming on, Jody Giglio. Keep working hard for the people of New York. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
The Cats Roundtable.
With us today is Zach Williams from the Bloomberg News Company, and he's going to give us a report of what's going on in Albany with the budget. Thank you, Zach, for being on this Sunday morning, and tell us, what is your gut feeling?
Well, after the governor announced a handshake agreement at the beginning of the week, there was several days of suspense before the final budget bills finally dropped Thursday morning. They included some really, you know, high-profile provisions, including increased penalties against people that assault retail workers, as well as increased penalties against people that kind of sell stolen goods. You know, alongside a bunch of other proposals in a spending plan that's expected to top $237 billion.
The number one question, and I asked David Patterson this, are New Yorkers going to be safer?
Well, you know, it depends how you look at it. You know, if you come from the political right, you know, people, you know, Republican lawmakers, for instance, are looking to really increase penalties on alleged criminals. And, you know, we do see in the budget the increased penalties that I've mentioned regarding retail theft, retail assault of retail workers. But, you know, this is a budget that is leaning more towards the progressive side of things, if anything, on criminal justice matters. There's expected to be a big housing plan that includes tenant protections that, if you're from the political left, you'd argue might affect crime rates. But, you know, all in all, this is a budget that really just doesn't have nearly as much controversy when it comes to criminal justice reforms and the like, compared to a year ago when bail reform was really being hashed out in detail.
What else did they spend money on? Is the subway people, the subway's going to be safer?
Well, certainly, you know, the increased funding, for example, for mental health services, you know, might make a dent in some of the homelessness that's seen in the subway. You know, what's really important for New York City Mayor Eric Adams, of course, is, you know, more than $2 billion to help the city, you know, fund all these social services, housing, food, and everything else for the incoming wave of migrants into the city. And, of course, you know, Governor Kathy Hochul has kind of kept an eye on some technological developments as well, with several proposals aimed at confronting the threats of artificial intelligence also included in the budget. So, you know, but I would say all in all, you know, it's the housing plan that's really front and center in this budget. You know, a key thing there was a tax incentive for real estate developers alongside those tenant protections against increased rents and evictions.
What else would you want to talk about? Are our taxes going up?
You know, the governor was pretty insistent on holding the line, and she succeeded when it came to income taxes. You know, the big tax that came through in this budget that's different than last year, you know, is one on managed care organizations. You know, who are they? They're people that kind of coordinate Medicaid funding for, you know, older folks or the indigent or people with disabilities. That could raise, you know, $4 billion. It all depends on some, you know, federal red tape getting cut. But all in all, I'd say this budget you know, really was really focused on the housing debate. Though, of course, there were many other important things in, you know, this $237 billion spending plan that, you know, should be all wrapped up, you know, nearly 3 weeks after the April 1st deadline.
Anything else you want to tell me, Wes?
Well, you know, we're going to be shifting to that part of the year when the state lawmakers are really going to be in the driver's seat when it comes to enacting policy. You know, the budget process gives the governor enormous leverage. But, you know, with the end of budget, it gives state lawmakers, you know, roughly 2 months before the June 6th end of the rescheduled legislative session to really have their go at a range of things that could, you know, be addressing labor issues, you know, housing issues, you know, tech issues and many other things that will undoubtedly affect people in New York City.
Thank you so much for coming on this Sunday morning and waking up early. And thank you so much.
Thanks so much, John.
This is the Cats Roundtable. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Cats Roundtable.
New Jersey, each day your beauty shines from farmland to the shore.
New With us this Sunday morning is Eric Schuffler, a Jerseyite. He's president of the Magic Waters Baseball and River Crossing Strategy Group. My God, well, he's also our partner in the Ferry Hawks. Knows about what's going on in New Jersey? Well, Eric, is the Senator Menendez going to say it's all my wife's fault?
Yes, and possibly some awkward dinners in the future there, John. Yeah, welcome, thanks, excited to be here. So Senator Menendez's trial on bribery and corruption charges is really coming up. It's in 3 weeks. And what's emerged in some court documents that were unsealed by the media was a strategy of my wife was doing things that I didn't know about. And I didn't have intent because I didn't know what she was up to. And his wife's trial has been delayed, so she'll be tried separately later on in the summer, enabling him. He will therefore have a different defense that he will put forward. Interesting, interesting, interesting.
You don't see that very often.
No, you don't. Nor do you often see some of the pictures and, you know, and other items that the, you know, the federal government's produced on Senator Menendez and his wife. So this is definitely, you know, one of the political trials of the century, and it will make for some interesting moments on the stand, you know, as a senator tries to explain his side of the story.
Well, that will be interesting. The other race is Senate. Who's going to be running for the Senate this November 5th?
You know, it looks like we're going to have Andy Kim, the congressman from Burlington County, on the New Jersey side after Tammy Murphy, the governor's wife, stepped out of the race a few weeks back. Republican side, there is a primary. The leading candidate is Curtis Bashaw, a developer, former government official, worked in the Casino Redevelopment Authority, hotel developer in New York City and Atlantic City. You know, a fairly moderate pro-growth economic development with a base down in the Cape May area in South Jersey. That's a big Senate race. Well, we also have a big primary in a House race in northern New Jersey over in Hudson County with Senator Menendez's son running, Rob Menendez Jr., running against the mayor of Hoboken. So it's rare that you get a primary with two very established political figures battling it out. So another race that New Jersey is really focused on is the congressional seat held by Senator Menendez's son.
And how's my good friend Jim McGreevy doing?
Jim McGreevy is doing great. Still one of the most noble, you know, public servants that I have met. He is working super hard, doing what he does best, being out in the community, meeting people, you know, caring. I think Jim's secret weapon is he cares an incredible amount about making Jersey City or New Jersey a better place. And he's on his way, but that election's next year. So a bit of time, but McGreevy works and works and works.
Well, the governor's race is not till next year. Murphy is term limited. Has he said anything of what he plans to do in the future?
He hasn't yet, but he'll have a lot of choices. You know, he's had a good run. He's got a lot of relationships at the federal level, former ambassador to Germany. He's bringing FIFA here in the World Cup finals to New Jersey. So it'll be interesting to see what he does next, but he's going to have a lot of really interesting options in front of him.
And there'll be a lot of candidates for that seat.
You know, New Jersey governor is considered the most powerful governor in the country. There is no other statewide elected official at the state level. You know, the governor appoints prosecutors, judges, the attorney general. So it is the plum position in New Jersey. So we will have our congressional people like Mikey Sherrill, from Essex County looking at it, Josh Gottheimer from Bergen County, Stephen Fulop, the mayor of Jersey City, is already declared. Stephen Sweeney, former Senate president from South Jersey, is already declared. Others may jump in. It is the big prize. You know, and Democrats have been in power for 8 years, and that creates openings for Republicans. They do win elections in New Jersey, John, just they tend not to be at the federal level. They tend to be at the governor level.
Let's move over from Jersey. Let's go back to Staten Island. We're only a few weeks away from opening.
It is crazy, John. So here we are Sunday morning. The team will be on a bus to Charleston, West Virginia on Wednesday. So we had two scrimmages this past weekend. You know, the big news for the Ferry Hawks is the signing of Pablo Sandoval. It is very rare you get to bring a three-time World Series champion, a World Series MVP with a $1 million nickname, the Kung Fu Panda, to come to Staten Island and play independent baseball. So the team is looking great. We're on to West Virginia in a few days. But the big thing, May 3rd, the home opener. May 4th, fireworks. It is going to be a great weekend. Fireworks with that view on the lower Manhattan skyline. Unbelievable.
I know. I always enjoy Friday nights. I go Friday nights mostly, and I enjoy those Nathan Frankfurters.
Your Nathan Frankfurters with a seat right behind home plate, watching the game. It's a great time. You know, but the stadium's so much more than baseball, John. We've got a beer festival planned for June 8th, planning some comedy shows, a concert. So the Ferry Hawks still play in the stadium with the best view in baseball, but we're planning a lot more than just baseball games for the stadium. Staten Island University Hospital Community Park.
Tell us the website if people want to buy tickets. I mean, people from New Jersey come to the games. People from lower Manhattan come to the it's a free ride to the stadium or right on the ferry.
Yeah, ferryhawks.com, FerryHawks.com. We're seeing a lot of our fans coming from lower Manhattan. That ferry's part of the adventure. They take the ferry ride over. We're about a 200-yard walk from the ferry stop. We're seeing people coming from New Jersey. Our attendance was up last year. Our 10 ticket sales really doing well this year. So come out and see the Kung Fu Panda, see a World Series champion. We have a lot of local players, a couple Staten Island kids, Brooklyn kids, some guys from New Jersey and lower Manhattan. We're really going to be a good team this year.
I heard you're negotiating with Mariano Rivera, too.
We're trying to see if we can lure him out of retirement.
I don't know. Maybe we can get him to pitch the ninth inning. How many games you lose on the ninth inning?
Too many.
Thank you, Eric Schefflo, and we'll catch up with you again next week. Thank
see
you so much.
At the ballpark.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. God
play
bless.
Ball. With us this Sunday morning is Dave Donovan. He is the president of the New York State Broadcasters Association. How do we save AM radio? Well, he's going to tell us right now because some of the electric vehicle car companies, they're trying to kill it. Dave Donovan, give us a report. Where are we right now?
Well, John, I'm happy to report that things are moving in the right direction. Bottom line is that you had companies like BMW, Mercedes, Tesla, and others who wanted to take AM out of cars, AM receivers. And what that means is that the only way you're going to get AM reception is through their new subscription-based digital services that they're going to try to sell. But during an emergency, those digital services don't work. And so AM radio, which is the backbone of the emergency alert service in New York State and around the country, was placed in jeopardy. 25% of all drivers, of all radio listeners in New York State and in New York City listen to AM radio. And so if you take it out of the cars, you have a real problem. For the longest time, this was moving along. Last year, legislation was introduced in the House and in the Senate. In the House, this bill requires the Department of Transportation to adopt regulations that require every vehicle to have an AM receiver in the car. It has to be standard equipment, and if it has to be in a conspicuous place, and if you have an EV that doesn't have this in it, you have to have a label. The bill requires that cars have AM receivers. There's some phase-in period, but the bottom line is going forward, all cars are going to have an AM receiver. This bill in the House has 246 co-sponsors, which is a remarkable number. And for the longest time, we couldn't get the bill through the House Commerce Committee, which is the first step in the process. But in a joint statement issued by the chair of that committee, Kathy McMorris Rodgers, and more importantly, the Democratic ranking member, Frank Pallone, out of New Jersey, they're going to hold a legislative hearing. And that's going to take place on April 30th. And what's really important is that the bill they're going to discuss is now exactly the same as the bill that's in the Senate. And the Senate bill has already passed the Senate Commerce Committee, and it's waiting for action on the floor. And frankly, the Senate was waiting for the House to try to move this bill forward. And now the fact that both Chairman McMorris Rodgers and Ranking Member Pallone have issued a joint statement saying this is a problem, have proposed a bill exactly the same as the Senate, combined with 246 votes, co-sponsors, that means there is a likelihood that this bill is going to move through the House, and then you're going to see the Senate move as well.
If you give me a list of all the congressmen that haven't committed yet, I promise you I will go to work on it.
John, that would be terrific. Right now, we have 16 members of the New York State House delegation that have already signed on to the bill. I've had others who have made commitments, but they haven't gone through the process of actually getting their name on the bill. And I would note on the Senate side, Senator Gillibrand supports the bill as a co-sponsor, and we've had great meetings with Leader Schumer to try to move this bill forward. But I'm more than happy to get you the names of the folks who, I don't think anyone's sitting on the fence, but folks that really could use a little nudge, that would be terrific.
I would love it. And let's save AM radio because... you know, it's part of our national defense. Yeah, when I was in Las Vegas last weekend, we met with FEMA, and they're going to spend a lot of money propping up AM radio and making it nuclear proof. And that way, God forbid, there's a problem that everybody can get it in on their cars. They can better get it on their transistor radios, et cetera, et cetera.
And John, that's been the the puzzle in all of this. The government has spent millions of dollars using AM radio for the emergency alert services, and AM is used because the reach is phenomenal. You reach 99% of the population with it. They've spent millions hardening, protecting these facilities from electromagnetic pulses. Your station, for example, is one of the key stations in New York State to get these messages out. For the automakers then to say, oh, we're going to undermine our national security and national defense communications because we want to change the dashboard so we can make more money, is just unfathomable that they would even think of doing this. And I think what you're seeing from Congress right now is, don't do this. We're going to protect AM and, frankly, protect our national defense communication system.
Thank you, Dave Donovan, and we'll look to catch up again real soon. And I look forward to that list, and I'll go to work on it for you.
I will, John. Thank you very much. And, John, thank you for all you do and what you've done with your station to let people in New York City know that this is a huge issue and one they should be concerned about. Great job. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being with us for the Cats Roundtable Local Edition, the number one show on Sunday mornings in New York. Keep listening to us for the Cats Roundtable National Edition between 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock. So we'll be back to you in a few minutes after the news.